This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. It's been a couple of weeks since we lost one of the great actors of this generation, Philip Seymour Hoffman, at the age of 46. The initial reports were that he overdosed on heroin. We don't have the autopsy information in yet, but that seems to be what his cause of death was. And so there's been a lot of talk about heroin and the rise in the use of heroin. In the last 12 months, the amount of people who are using heroin is twice what it was just 6 or 7 years ago. But it's not just heroin that's a problem in this country. It's a lot of pills that have kind of the same effect as heroin on a lot of people and a lot of addiction problems as well. Here to talk about that is Dr. Stephen Lankenau, who's a sociologist at the Drexel University School of Health. Welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you.
Which pills are we talking about?
There's often a progression from less potent pills, such as hydrocodone, commonly found in the form of Vicodin, to more potent ones like oxycodone, found in Oxycontin. So drug users kind of are often exposed to those, like I said, less potent ones, and then as their patterns of use increase, they may transition to the more potent pills.
So is this something where somebody starts out on pills and then works their way towards heroin, or vice versa?
Well, I think it's important to realize first that the great majority of people who are ever prescribed these medications won't transition to misuse or heroin, and that these pills are really important for treating both chronic pain conditions and sometimes can be used for drug addiction themselves. But there is, in my research, I've found that there seems to be an emerging pattern where young adults who do eventually inject heroin do start with prescription pills. On average, they may be initiating around 14 and a half and then transitioning to heroin at age around 16 and a half.
How is the high different for them?
It's pretty similar, actually. The body treats the whether it's an opioid or a heroin the same once it's consumed. But it may vary depending upon the potency of the heroin or the potency of the prescription pain medication. Sometimes, if the heroin is not as potent, the user may supplement it with a pain pill or another drug like a prescription tranquilizer to boost the effect.
I know I had some surgery a couple of years ago, and afterwards they gave me, I think it was oxycodone, for pain relief. And just taking it once, I really did not like what it was doing to me. And I told them, you know what, I'm going to have to go with some sort of non-narcotic version of a painkiller here. Put me on a lot of ibuprofen instead of this stuff, because I just couldn't take it.
Sure. What's also being realized as well, in about 20 states, it's now legal to use marijuana for medical purposes.
Yep.
So many individuals who, just like yourself, found the narcotic to be too powerful may, if it's available, may opt for medical marijuana to treat other chronic pain or similar conditions.
Well, I'm curious if we're also experiencing people who are heroin addicts who want to get off of that, and then perhaps they get into an accident or they get hurt and they get put on one of these painkillers, and all of a sudden, boom, yeah, I was in rehab from heroin, and then I ended up on pills.
It's possible. I think drug treatment providers are often very, you know, sensitive to that, and so I think there's much greater awareness of that possible transition. But I think there are some important new medications out there for heroin treatment, like buprenorphine and so forth. So there are some good treatments available for heroin users.
Are there certain patients who have a tendency towards addiction to these drugs, and is there a way for somebody who's prescribing these drugs to know that ahead of time?
It's hard to say. I think certainly some individuals may have, you know, family histories of problems with addiction, or may have other patterns of addiction, so it's really a case by case basis, and also some individuals may just have more traumatic experiences, whether psychological or physical, that could put them at greater risk to transition to misuse once they're exposed to the drug or once they begin kind of using it recreationally, and then may realize that this is useful for other reasons to self-medicate for other problems.
All right, we're talking about legal painkillers here, but they're opiates just like heroin, as you mentioned. We're talking about people who are getting them legally in most cases, but there's got to be a black market in these things as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They're often sometimes referred to as pill mills. There'll be kind of offices where it's known that you can show up with an MRI or not have a legitimate doctor's prescription and get the medications fairly easily. So there's been a real crackdown on those in recent years once they've been kind of uncovered. But if there is just, given over the last 25 years or so, the number of prescriptions has dramatically increased. So there's just many more of these prescription pills floating around or available, and those can then be diverted either kind of innocently from a medicine cabinet or just wholesale diversion if someone does connect with a doctor who's writing scripts kind of illegally.
Yeah, but I would bet that it's not necessarily the user who's going to that doctor. I bet that there are plenty of people who are using fake prescriptions or other ways to get the pills, and that's where the black market really exists.
Right. There's certainly an understanding that's going to be a bit of money to be made from the sale of these pills. And so once someone develops a connection, then they can exploit that and result in a lot of pills getting out for wider circulation.
Speaking of money, which is cheaper, the pills or the heroin?
It can really vary depending upon the city and location. And sometimes the pain pills will sell for a dollar a milligram, so an 80-milligram pill could cost $80. In other cases, heroin may cost cost $10 for a bag of it. So so that can really kind of influence what a user may purchase, depending upon what's available or what's cheaper.
I want to go back to Philip Seymour Hoppin for just a second. He was addicted to heroin more than two decades ago. I think we were told that he'd been off heroin for something like 23 years. Mm. And there have got to be plenty of people who have kicked the habit as well. But then later on in their life, maybe they get exposed to one of these opiates like OxyContin or Vicodin or something like that. Can that re-trigger something inside them that makes that old addiction desire come right back?
It's possible, and again, I would think that it may be linked to just being both, as you say, kind of sensitized to it, knowing what the experience is, and then years later, you run into a rough patch, either physically, you get injured, psychologically, something traumatic occurs, and you have the opportunity to use again, and then you can, without the proper support from family or other support groups, you could slip into old patterns of use. And just the potency of the drugs have increased in recent years, so you may suddenly be using substances that are stronger than they were 10, 15, 20 years ago.
And then that old rush comes back and the desire comes back and the addiction feeling is back again?
Potentially, and if it again depends on who you're using with, who you're being supported by. There are a bunch of factors that can accelerate those patterns of use. Are you using alone? Are you using with? Have you connected with your old colleagues who are you using with? Those factors can accelerate patterns of use.
The last thing I want to ask you about, I've been reading recently about a drug that I think it's EMTs carry with them now in ambulances and elsewhere, so that if they come upon somebody who has overdosed, whether it's on heroin or one of these legal pills that we're talking about, that they can give them, and I don't know the name of the drug, I'm sure you do, and it can almost reverse the effects of that immediately. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, absolutely. It's called the generic name is naloxone, and the brand name is Narcan. And significantly, it's not only EMTs, but there's about 200 community-based programs around the country that actually teach drug users and family members, if they choose, what are some of the risks around overdose, and train them how to administer naloxone in the event that the person overdoses. So they're told to, of course, call 911, but it's really the minutes are critical in saving someone's life. So if you were to come upon a friend or a family member who had overdosed, you kind of look for the signs, you call 911, and then if they're still not responsive, then you can inject the naloxone. And the person, if it's primarily an overdose due to a heroin or a pain pill, the person will come out of it pretty rapidly if it's appropriately administered. So that's a really important intervention that's not as widely known about, but is really making a big impact in communities around the country.
Why is it not more widespread?
There's just some potential, you know, controversy. Is it a good idea to train drug users or civilians how to use naloxone? It is a prescription drug, so there's concern that maybe there could be misuse or mishandling of the naloxone. Though I should say there's no psychoactive effects associated with naloxone. It purely just operates on the opioid receptor, so someone can't get high off using naloxone, for instance.
Is part of the fear that if you tell heroin users about this drug, then they won't be as worried about an overdose? Because after all, somebody could just hit them with the naloxone.
Sure.
And
it's possible, but anyone that's ever experienced a reversal from naloxone would tell you it's a very unpleasant experience, because the person immediately goes into drug withdrawal once they're hit with the naloxone. So
yeah,
drug users know that it's not something to be messed with, and that it's really an undesirable thing to be injected with naloxone. So I don't think that's really would be a real factor for why it's not accepted.
So it's not like, I'm overdosing, give me a shot, I got to go to work.
No, not like that. Not like that at all.
Dr. Stephen Lankenau is a sociologist at the Drexel University School of Health. Thanks so much for helping me understand this and for joining me here today.
You're welcome.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.